Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and this is the Downtime Podcast, LeBrest post-race show. Once again, we've got Elliot Jackson and Nico Mullally joining us to talk through all the detail of what went on at LeBrest. Before that, just a reminder that you can head to our website, downtimepodcast.com, for everything you need that's podcast related. You can subscribe to the podcast there, it's free. You'll get every episode delivered to your device as soon as it's available. You can support the podcast and help us keep going by heading to the shop and buying yourself a t-shirt. Or you can find all the links for following us on social media and all that kind of stuff. Also, there's show notes with any links of stuff that we mentioned in the episodes. No messing about, let's get into this one. Here's Elliot Jackson and Nico Mullally. All right, everyone, welcome to our LeBrest post-race show, where we're going to get into the detail of what went on over the weekend. Joining us again this week, we've got Nico Mullally and Elliot Jackson. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks. Yeah, stoked to be back on the show.
Good stuff. So before we go too far, Nico, sorry to see you not racing on Sunday. Broken hand in practice, is that right?
Yeah, Sunday morning, last practice before the race, I went over the bars and broke my hand. So that was a bit of a bummer, but I was going for it, and I can be proud of that. So it was a good season. Unfortunately, I'll miss Worlds now. But yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes in downhill racing.
Yeah. So back at home and getting some TLC and getting checked out by the doctors, yeah?
Yep. I was planning to stay after LeBrest, ride a week in Morzine and go to Worlds, but I just, after this, had to come home yesterday and went to the doctor this morning, and looks like you can just keep it in a cast for a couple weeks and it should heal on its own. So it's pretty straightforward. I've had more complicated injuries in the past, so I'm not too stressed about this one.
Yeah, and I guess a good time for it, right? So admittedly missing Worlds, but otherwise off-season and a good break to get yourself fixed up and fit again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a great season, and unfortunately just cut a little bit short, but this time of the year I'm not too opposed to taking some time off and relaxing a bit. So,
excellent.
It's a bummer, but it's not a huge deal for me.
Cool. Good stuff, man. And Elliot, how was Crankworx? I think that you were in Whistler last time we spoke.
Yeah. Crankworx was awesome. Yeah, it seemed like even more busy than normal. I don't know how, but yeah, it's always so good. Like, rode really well, and yeah, just had like a really good time.
Cool. Good stuff. I saw some pretty awesome whip-off pictures of you getting fairly steezy, so must have been good.
Man, I that one was really good. I feel like Whistler Whip-Off is almost like the worst one now somehow. Like, all the other events have like such good jumps and everything. Like, Whistler has a really good crowd, but yeah, this year was good.
Awesome. Have they made changes then to the jumps, or have they just felt right this year?
All the other events, I think Whistler's actually the only one that hasn't like done any changes to the jumps. Like, Rotorua, or all of them have their own like separate jump. It would be sweet if Whistler did like something in the Boneyard or something near the slopestyle. That would be awesome. But
yeah, cool. All righty. Well, let's talk about LeBrest then. So the World Cup Circus has been there before. I think certainly Nico, I know you've raced there. I'm not sure about you, Elliot, but we were in a different place this time, right? I think they'd moved up the hill towards the bike park. So totally new track. And I guess track walks the first time that a lot of people had seen it. So Nico, take us through track walk on a brand new track. Is it something that you approach a bit differently?
Yeah, it's always tough when you're on a new one, because it's hard to remember where you are on the track, how, like, what section kind of before this and how you come into it. When you've ridden a track before, you kind of know how it rides and how it flows and what speed you're going, how you're feeling at that point in the run. So it's easier to gauge what you can do. But on a new track, you kind of, like, me anyway, like, whenever I get to a like a road crossing or a ski slope crossing, something that splits it up, I try to think of, like, okay, start from the start gate and go through the whole track until now. And it kind of helps me remember it and keep it all in order. A lot of tracks these days, they look the same. Like, a lot of corners look the same. So it's hard to, like, if you go to Fort William for the first time, the whole thing looks like gray and open, so blind rise that you don't know what's over it. So it's hard when if you go there for the first time to remember the whole track, because a lot of it looks the same. And La Bresse, this one was pretty short, so it was easier to remember that way. And it had distinct sections as well. So, but yeah, it's always exciting looking at a new track because it's a new challenge. You're putting a new puzzle together, and it's just more fun than doing the same thing you did last year.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. And so once you got on the track and had a walk down it, what were your thoughts on it? Because it was quite an odd track. It's a bit different to a lot of the other stuff on the World Cup circuit.
It was weird because it was, like you say, very different. And whether that was good or bad, I think it was nice to have something in a 7-round series that was different than the other ones, just a new challenge or a different kind of change of pace. But it did have sections that resembled kind of other tracks. Like for being 220 in length, it was it had so many different things on it. You know, you come out of the gate, you have a sprint, and you had some berms. Then there was some roots, and then there was some jumps, some like big tables you had to scrub, and then some flat wood section, and then some pretty steep stuff. Like for about 5 seconds, you felt like you were in Val d'Isol, and then some like fast ski slope stuff at the bottom. So it really did have like a whole lot of different sections packed into such a short run. I'd say the main thing that was different was the average speed on this course was really low. It was a slower track. It wasn't too steep. The gradient was pretty flat most of the way, and then it being wet made it even slower. So that was a change for sure. Like some of the other tracks, the way they're getting these days is so brutally fast that to be going at a slower pace kind of just changed the momentum, the dynamic of the race a little bit.
Yeah. And what about you, Elliot? Obviously, a track that you've not ridden. Are you sat at home like me, going through all the track walk photos and catching up on the videos and stuff?
Yeah, I think this was one of the ones where I had some FOMO. Like the track looks so good, and like everyone was really stoked on it. And I'm a big fan of like the little bit lower speed tracks, and like, you know, had some good turns and stuff like that. So it looked like it was really, really fun to ride. I don't know, maybe Nico, you could talk about like the difference between, you know, like learning a track. You like touched on a little bit, but like, because for me, like a lot of the times when I go to a new track or like go to an old track, you don't have to like go through that whole like remembering where it's at. Like I know like Cairns, I still probably don't remember like all those turns at the top, but what would be the difference in practice? Like, you know, first like three runs or whatever, like what are you doing on a new track compared to like an old track?
So these days when we walk it, we've got a lot of stuff that can help us. Like I take pictures with my phone a lot from like the line that I want to be on and kind of go through that before practice. And then while we're riding, we use a GoPro and kind of film all of our runs and watch them in the pits. So that helps you learn it a lot faster. But normally, like I start out with the ideal line, the one that like I think that I'm going to ride, and try to make that work for me until it doesn't. And then I've usually got a couple of things that I need to go back up and rethink after I follow my plan from track walk. And then like through the day, you're really just getting it down to where you're like, okay, I'm on all the good lines. I don't want to change anything. And then you do it. Time practice, we've got normally timed runs from like 3 to 5 at the end of the day, and try to like do a full run during that and see what worked when you were tired, what worked when you had to change gears and how your shift points were and where you needed to brake more. Just kind of learn like a dry run through, and then the next day in qualifying you kind of have all those kinks worked out. So it just progresses through the weekend, and then hopefully your final run is the very best you can do.
Do you think that there's like a little bit more exploration going on, like on a new track where you would change lines like a lot more, like people are finding some different lines, like even in the videos I saw, there was like a left right, like that got a ton of coverage where people was blowing up a berm. and it looked like you could like jump up high before it, and I saw Loic kind of inside those two things. Whereas like, you know, on a track you've been to, you would maybe have done all that stuff before.
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, sometimes on the tracks we've been to, they get so beat up that you're searching for it as well. So it's just like a race mentality that you're going to always be looking for that type of stuff. And on a new track, I think it's just it's all a lot fresher, so it comes out quicker because there's not like the main line that everyone raced last year. They're kind of, everybody's searching for that. They want to be on the good line in their race run, not watching the replay from last year, figuring out what they did wrong. So yeah, for sure. But this track, it didn't actually have that many line options. Like the line options were pretty subtle. And but at the same time, it being so short, they were just as important. Each little one was very important because of how tight the racing was going to be on such a short track. So yeah, the couple of lines that there were crucial.
And did the track change much throughout practice? I'm sure it did when it got wet, but what about in the dry?
Yeah, I was actually really surprised at how rough it was the very first practice run that we did after track walk, just from B practice. Dirt was like pretty dry. I guess it hadn't rained there in a while. But in the woods, it even rained overnight after track walk, and it was dusty, like Baldasol dusty. And getting cut up and breaking bumps and rough, which I was pretty stoked about because when we walked it, it seemed very simple and straightforward. And I thought it might be too easy to where riders were all going to be doing the same time. But when we rode it the first time in practice, it was actually pretty rough and the holes were coming out in some of those steeper sections. And I was pretty happy to see it getting a little bit more challenging than it first appeared.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously the rain arrived. Was it, when did the heavy rain come? Was that between the end of practice and qualifying, or was it on the Saturday? Did you get to ride in those conditions before quali?
No. So during practice before quali on Saturday, it was pretty wet and pretty greasy. It wasn't like a hard rain, but like it was definitely slipperier than after it rained more. For our quali runs, it was raining pretty hard during the run, and the track was actually better than it was in practice. In practice, it was just like greasy, slick, and in the quali run, it was pretty saturated, and the mud was a lot thinner, so it wasn't as slippery as it was. It was just visibility and stuff was harder.
Yeah. So what changes do you make when the weather goes that way? Then are there things you can do? A lot of people had the like clear section on their visor extender. That obviously helps a bit. Are there other things that you're doing to help with visibility and to deal with the conditions?
Tear offs are important for your race run. It's hard in practice because if you stop a lot, the water gets between the tear offs and the goggles, and it gets sometimes harder to see. So if you're practicing, just a towel in the pocket and wipe your lens is sometimes better than trying to fiddle your tear offs. But for the race run, definitely having a tear off and having a good place that you want to pull it. If you're a boss like Elliot, you can probably pull it over the jump and while you're scrubbing. and then having a good fender too. Like we run the Marsh Guards with the little front piece on them, and having the nose piece helps a lot with the water that gets sprayed off the front of the bike, and then you run into your own roost sort of deal. So having a good mud guard. Having the clear taping a goggle lens to your helmet helps because you can put your visor down when you're going fast in the open, getting just hit with rain, and you can cover your vision with your peak of your helmet, and having the clear piece at the end, you can kind of see through it, but it still stops the water from hitting you directly in the eye.
Okay, cool. And what about bike setup for this track then? So like you said, it was a bit of a mixture, like a bit of a greatest hits of various other tracks, and you know, big difference in gradients, quite a bit of pedaling, few steep rough sections. Where do you head with bike setup? Is it just a fairly kind of in the middle setup, or are you kind of setting the bike up to favor a particular part of the track?
So I thought I could get away with a softer setting at first, just because the track was going to be slower. but there was enough of the pedaling and pumping on the jumps, and you really needed to get a good drive on that stuff. It made a big difference if you could carry speed into that next wood section. That you ended up going with like a pretty similar setup to the faster courses. But then there was parts where, because it was so different, like the some of the flat wood, your bike felt really bad because there was a lot of roots that were hanging you up. But I think it was just like that for everyone. There wasn't really much. You couldn't really set your bike up just to go through that flat wood section well, because it didn't feel good no matter what you did, sort of deal. So, yeah, I think it was just finding the places that your bike was going to stand to gain the most from being set up well, and like carrying speed through those jumps. So running your pressures, like, I wouldn't say much stiffer, but not any softer to do with the rain or the slower course, definitely helped. And then, yeah, I think that was most of my setup. I didn't really change too much else.
Yeah. And what about the physical demands of the track? A lot of people were saying it was very physical. There's clearly quite a bit of pedaling. How did it feel?
Yeah. You know, I didn't find that it was that crazy physical because it was short. There was definitely a hard pedal, but it wasn't anything too crazy. You came out of the gate, you sprinted, and then after the jump sections, you had to pedal pretty hard. And then after that, it wasn't really any pedaling until you were at the finish line. But it definitely wore you out. But I think that in years past, there's been a lot more of that stuff in downhill races. And the way the courses are now, with the jumps and the pumping, there's hardly any pedaling really on a lot of the tracks that we race. So to have to have a short sprint like that, I was surprised at how many people were saying that it was super physical, because I didn't find it to, like, yeah, it was physical, but it wasn't anything like when we used to race in South Africa. Like the first couple of years of that was so hard. Like you couldn't see the end of it when you were on track walk, like how far you were pedaling. It felt like it was like literally a mile of flatness. Like you were sprinting it for probably 45 or 50 seconds. And like, if you add up all the sprints on this track, each one was maybe 10 seconds. So it wasn't anything crazy, but it was definitely more than we're used to the past couple of years on the downhill circuit. So yeah, it definitely added something else into the mix, which was, yeah, I don't think that's bad. I think it's in a 7-race series, good to have some stuff like that.
Yeah. And Elliot, were you still feeling like you were missing out when you were watching them sprinting through the mud and the rain?
I think one of the things that I didn't really think about, like while I was watching it, was like how cold it was. Like, I feel like French rain, like European rain, is just so much colder than everywhere else in the world. I don't know what it is, but. Yeah. I was a little bit less stoked on that.
But it looked pretty horrible. It didn't look like there was a lot of undercover space at the top of the hill for people to get warmed up in. Was it a bit of a struggle up there?
Yeah, my mechanic got me a good spot under the tent, which that made a big difference during the qualifying. But yeah, there wasn't much space. I don't know if you guys saw, like, Bernard brought the Pivot Easy up to the top, and they were like, I don't know, joking around, they were going to rent space underneath it, which doesn't surprise me from those guys. It was a good move that they brought their Easy up to the top, because there wasn't much place to stay dry up there. But yeah, it was super cold, and like, something to touch on for bike setup as well. Like I opened up my rebound because the colder temperatures just made the bike, the oil just felt like it wasn't moving the same way. So that's something you can mess with sometimes when it's colder. And I definitely noticed it on Saturday morning when I went up to ride. I was like, man, rebound feels super slow because it's cold out this morning. And it was pretty cold. Like, I guess it was like 9 degrees Celsius, which is like 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
Good grief.
Kind of crazy
August. Yeah, do you find that once the shock warms up in a run, when it's moving and working hard, does the rebound then end up kind of a bit too quick by the time you're at the bottom of the track, or do you not notice much change?
I mean, I'm not opening it up completely. I think I did like two clicks to my low speed and high speed rebound in my shock, and two clicks to the fork, And so just a little bit, like, I'm not changing it. Like, even if it was warm, that wouldn't be a huge change, but just kind of like opens it up just a little bit when the oil's cold. So, I wouldn't say that I noticed it getting too warm, but, in those conditions, like I ride a lot at home in the wintertime when it's cold like that. And that's a big thing. It's hard to test because, like, a lot of times you want to do some bike setup and testing in the winter, but when it's so cold, it changes the whole dynamic of how that oil moves. So you can't get an accurate setting when you're riding in temperatures that are like way off of what you're going to be racing in the summertime.
Yeah, interesting. We've had a warm summer in the UK for like the first time in about 20 years. So we're used to just running cold weather settings the whole time.
Yeah,
I think.
So your bike feels good now because it's normal temperature.
Yeah, exactly. It's totally working. So let's talk a bit about the racing then. We'll start off with the women. And Tani laid it down in qualifying. I think she was kind of, was it 8 or 9 seconds? Something like 8 seconds, 8.2 seconds up on Rachel in the qualifying run. That's sending a pretty strong message, but Rachel somehow just seems to be able to manage to handle that pressure these days. Elliot, take us through your thoughts on the women's race.
Yeah, it was like pretty crazy that she was able to do that. Like, she qualifies so well or quickly. Just so I have like a better idea. Nico, do you know? Could you give like a little overview of like all the different sectors? Like, if you were like, had to be like, oh, like sector one was like, you know, pretty flat, a little bit turny, like sector two was this or whatever.
Yeah. So the splits this weekend were super short. I mean, it was a short track, but when you have, I guess, 5 sectors, is it, Elliot? There's 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So on a 2:20 track, they're going to be all really short. The first sector was a sprint out of the gate for about 10 seconds. Then a few berms and a root section. So it kind of had a few different things, but it wasn't anything crazy technical to throw people off. There was just like one kind of hard root turn where you watched the broadcast where Aaron crashed in his race run. And then the split came up right before the jumps. And then sector two was just the tabletops. It was really short. It's like how well you can scrub and pump those jumps and then kind of get a drive up into the woods. And then the third sector was the flat part of the woods. So it was pretty slow moving and super flat, felt like an enduro trail. And then the fourth sector was pretty much the most accurate part of the track to what we're racing all season, where it was like a steep, gnarly downhill track where you had that section I described was kind of like Val d'Isole in one part, super steep holes, roots, and then you drop down onto the road and hit the rock section out onto the ski slope. I guess the split was right before that rock section, and then the final split was the rock section and then the ski slope turns. So the last two splits were, I guess, the gnarliest two, the most similar to the rest of the downhill races.
Mm-hmm.
So something else to mention as well, before we talk too much about the qualifying, is that there wasn't any points for qualifying this weekend. So Red Bull, I guess, had the idea that they wanted the live TV to be more exciting. They didn't want somebody to win the race off live TV. So they wanted to offer the points in the final was going to be, if you got first place, it would be as if you got first in qualifying and first in the final. And then there was no points for qualifying. So it actually affected things because of the weather. As I was there racing, it seemed like it affected things more than I kind of expected because it was raining so hard during that run. I think some of the guys that there wasn't any reason to push were kind of like, I'm not really in the mood right now. It's like raining. It's really cold. I'm not going to get any points for this. So they kind of just took it back a little bit. And then guys like I put in the same effort that I do in all my quality runs. I finished 10th. Which was pretty good. I had some fast splits. And guys like Luca said, no point, no point. So you could tell, like, they were just a little bit slower than if there's a lot on the line for them. And that might have been the case for Rachel as well. Like 8 seconds for Tani to beat her is a lot, and with no points on the line and like it raining a lot during their race more than they practiced, it might not be like in there. And I can see how in your mind you're like, okay, I'm not going to gain anything from this. I'm not going to go out and take any unnecessary risks. Whereas like for me, I got nothing to lose. Like I'm whether I score points or not, like I want to go out there and you know, it's raining. This is my chance to beat these guys. It's kind of like a bit of an equalizer now that it's raining rather than a normal condition. So I think in both races, you saw a little bit of that more than if there had been points on the line.
Yeah. That is really interesting. Cause I was kind of thinking the same thing, like going into it, I was like, okay, so everyone that like, you know, to me would take time training really seriously would probably do well in this sort of format. Just because they're like used to going for it, you know, with not as much on the line. And so I wonder, yeah, like I wonder if Tani maybe took that same approach, but I think Rachel definitely seems like the kind of person that, is the no points, no point kind of person. Like, you know, Tracy was kind of closer to her, in qualifying, in the last race than she was all season. And I think Tani probably, you know, kind of went for it. And then in finals, yeah, just like so close. Like Rachel only won by 0.6. And, you know, through the whole race, like they were all like right on top of each other. Like Rachel, or I think Tani won the last sector. But Rachel was like a little bit up throughout the whole race. And it's that same story. It seems like Rachel and Tani, and then it's 11 seconds back to Miriam Nicole. And then, you know, Tracy is like a second back from there. Katie Curd is 3 seconds back, which is a good result for her. And then Nina Hoffman is, I think it's probably her first time up there. But it's actually interesting because the girls race, even because of the rain, like everyone's really close. You know, it's only like a, what is that? Like an 8 second gap from third to eighth, which is pretty close. So I don't know. I think it's good that the women's racing is like really close. I know you have like Rachel and Tani who are way up there, and my prediction was off, but yeah. It seemed like a good race.
Yeah. It was a good one to watch. And yeah, Nico called that. I think you picked Rachel as the winner, Nico. So good work.
Yeah,
on
I
that
just
one.
Didn't want to choose the same as you guys, so I got lucky.
Fair enough. And there's rumors kicking around of Rachel not racing next year, which would be a massive shame, I think, because there's definitely like Tani needs some competition, and obviously, you know, there's a winter to go and we'll see how everyone steps up. But they really do seem to be, you know, putting quite a good gap on the rest of the field at the moment.
Yeah, it would be awesome to see her keep racing. But I can understand too, is in her shoes, it must be tough every year to go and keep doing it, because it's brutal. She's had so many injuries and she's won everything there is to win. So I can understand how she would feel like, what more can I do other than hurt myself worse and win the same thing I've already won? So I can understand how she feels proud of what she's done and kind of ready to move on. But as a fan of the sport, like we all want to see her race. It makes it really exciting.
Yeah,
for sure. And we don't know, I guess, at this point whether Valley will move up into elite from the junior ranks or not. I think, is it right that she gets a decision as to whether she moves up next year?
I don't know for sure, but I believe that she can. I believe that if you're a junior, you can decide. Like, I think Richie Rude did that when they first started with juniors.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
You can choose, but you can't go back and forth. Like, I think you have to decide at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I totally, that messed me up actually when I was doing the website, because I was like, why is Richie in the elites this year? Because I think that was the year I wasn't racing, in 2013. But I'm always kind of confused as to why Valentina Hall would move up. Like, I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't know, like I would just stay in juniors and like win and like get more experience, and you know, like you have your whole career ahead of you. To me, like I would just take another junior title. And
yeah, but I don't know. I don't think the junior title, the way she's winning it by 30 seconds everywhere.
I guess
it's not like like nobody even looks at the results anymore. They just expect that she won because she always wins by so much. So
yeah,
I mean, yeah, it's good to stay down and figure out how to win, and but I think she's already pretty well figured that out and dominating it. So I mean, at what point is it not even fun for her anymore, where she's she's just like, so all true. I gotta do is show up and ride my bike down the hill.
Yeah, cruise down. Yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah,
so yeah, and if she was able as a junior to race elite and get a podium or win a race, like that's got to be one of the first times that that's kind of been done.
So, yeah, that is so true. That was always like really exciting. Yeah, like back in the day when the juniors and the elites raced together, like it was always so exciting when like you had some great results. And I remember like watching Troy and like he got that podium, same with Loic. And so it was like, you're always like, oh, dude, that makes it even better almost.
Yeah, I used to quite like it. I used to enjoy seeing it mixed up a little bit, but I understand why they've separated it out. And I'm sure it will help in the same way that the women's field has been pushed on. I'm sure it will help spur on the other junior women, and they'd all be working super hard over the winter trying to close the gap on Valley. So who knows? Cool. All right. Let's move on to the men's racing then, because I mean, the women's was exciting, but this was pretty eventful. What did you pick up, Elliot? What were the kind of key observations for you from the men's racing?
I think in qualifying, like Nico was saying, is a little bit hard to see like who was pushing, like who kind of wanted it and who didn't. But it was really good to see everything mixed up. You saw like Joe Smith up there. G got a, you know, he won qualifying, which was awesome. It seemed like after Mount St. Anne, like he kind of like got his groove back maybe. And he was just like really enjoying it, like really enjoying riding and racing. And I think this kind of like just wet, muddy, hard, like cold, like it's just suits G, you know, because it rains like, you know, 400 days a year in Wales. And
yeah,
and so he's like used to riding it, and it's like a little bit flatter and stuff like that. Like I remember when I went up there, this was, or I mean, having not been to Le Brest, but it did, you know, the shorter tracks, like really rooty, you know, a little bit of like flatter technical, seemed to like it would suit him well. And then like Amari, I don't know how he just is always there, but he's like always there. And so, yeah, I figured like the positions would like shake up a lot from qualifying to finals, and definitely did. Like Bernard got a podium. Like I was really surprised at that. I figured he would do well when he came down with that time, but for him to get a podium is like really awesome. Same with like Matt Walker, one of the original Vanzac dudes. He I think got first or second one of the splits in time training. I think it was the like more physical section, sector 2 or 3, maybe it was a jump section. And then same with like Connor, like he was riding really well all weekend, and then like in the final he slipped a pedal off the start.
Yeah, that was a real shame to see, because his splits further down were good, huh?
Yeah. He's done that. Like that's like it's like funny. Everyone talks about the like with flat pedals. Like everyone's like, oh, like you know, you can pedal harder or whatever. But like, man, the biggest difference to me is just your feet stay on the pedals. Like I remember the first year going to Val de Sol. After I'd switched to clips, and I was like, oh my God, this is like so much easier. I can just like passenger down the track and not like have to worry about my feet, like, you know, bouncing all over the track and whatever. And on like a wet track where you have like a lot of pedaling over rough stuff, I feel like that's like, you know, the nemesis, like the flat pedal's natural enemy is that kind of stuff.
But then the benefit of a quick dab in conditions like that, I guess, but if you're used to clips enough, I suppose, then you can get your foot out pretty quickly if you need to put it down. But
yeah, I think so. Like, I think I've gotten used to it, but I think you're right. Like flat pedals on something like that would be a little bit nice. Like anytime it's wet, like where you don't even have to worry about it, like you can just take your foot off, you like put your feet back on however you want, don't have to worry about like your cleat getting clogged up with dirt and stuff like that. But it was interesting watching the race and then going back and looking at the actual times, because like when you watch the race, it looked like Martin just smashed the bottom like crazy, you know? And he did. But it was also, and I think maybe Nico could talk a little bit about it, but all the dudes who did well, you know, maybe the last two sectors had gotten a little worse, because the people who did well at the top kind of didn't do well at the bottom after that. You know, like G won the first, or he was first on the second and third sector, and then he was like, he lost like 2.3, and then like lost another 0.8 at the bottom on those steeper sections that Nico was talking about. And it was kind of the same for everyone, like Brooke and Remy and Bernard, like everyone was losing around like 2.5 seconds. But you know, if you look at the actual sector times there, like Connor was only like 0.6 down there. I think who was third? Greg Williamson was third there. He only lost a second, and then he crashed at the bottom. Amari was only 1.1. So like Martin did make up a ton of time on that fourth sector, but it was also kind of like, you know, the later riders lost a lot more time down there. So I don't know, Nico, like you think it was one of those tracks where it changed a lot, like for the later riders?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Martin Mays. He's an amazing rider, and I don't think any of us would have guessed that he won the race. Yeah. I didn't even know he was going to race. I didn't know if he entered in the race. Yeah. But if you told me that Martin Mays won a World Cup, I would never be surprised. Like, the dude won Seattle Del Sol, he won the last year.
Yeah.
Like, he's just amazing bike rider all around. So, yeah. Not take anything away from him, but I think that the conditions certainly helped him. And it stopped raining right around the time when the TV started, so maybe like an hour before the last guy. And when it was raining, the mud was a lot thinner. Like, you can see when he's going through some sections, like the water's splashing up, and then when other guys go through, it's just become a lot thicker mud that's kind of slowing you down. So I think it was kind of through that sector 3 and 4 together where he really put the big dent in. And I just think that the track was running slower at the end. I mean, guys like the best in the world, you know, like you watch guys on TV make no mistakes and lose a second or 2 seconds to him. So it was kind of hard to understand watching the race. Like, you'd see like Loic, who's the most talented dude, come through the section perfectly clean and lose in that 1 30-second piece 2 seconds. Like, how is that possible?
Yeah, that is crazy. That's the crazy thing too, is it's like a 30-second sector and like, yeah, for people to be losing that much time, I was like, it's just crazy. Like, I wish we could have seen more of you know, that steeper stuff that you're talking about, because on the TV, like, that's all we saw was people, you know, do the jumps and then kind of like that little slog. Yeah, I guess before and after that. But yeah, even still, you could see, I kind of would gauge it on that jump, after the jumps,
yeah,
I guess, where you had to kind of pedal. And yeah. And like the later dudes, like just look like it. You would come through that section perfect, get perfect pedals, and just barely make it.
So high. Like if you watch Martin Mace, he's low. He's like fast over that jump. And then when he lands, there's like puddles that are splashing him. The other guys are like pulling up so high in the air. Yeah. And then they're like, there's clearly not any puddles anymore. So
yeah,
I don't know. I don't want to say that it's totally, because I think Martin would have done awesome whether it happened like that or not. But another way to explain it maybe too is like riders were saying how physical the track was. You had a flat section into one of the most technical sections. So I don't think maybe downhill riders were used to having to sprint like that and go through like a flat physical section and then drop into one of the more technical gnarly sections. As well as the EWS guys, like that's all they do is they sprint and then ride the gnarliest shit. So that's like maybe something that Martin Mays is really good at as well, where he could put his max power out through there, be fastest through the flat section, and then straight into the steep section fastest again, where the downhill guys, maybe they were like gassed and then not able to push as hard or be as on point to the more technical stuff after that.
There was a bit of a line. I couldn't quite work it out on the footage, but as you came out of the kind of motorway section into that flat pedal, Martin Mays seemed to like go straight and double down into that flat, whereas most people seem to be making a left right round a tree. Was there multiple line choice coming into that flat woods?
Yeah, there was. But it was pretty minimal. Like it wasn't a big deal there. Okay. Like really the whole way through, there wasn't a whole lot of line choice. It was just how you're able to carry speed. You had to come in that woods with a lot of speed and then kind of be like light on your feet to not get pushed, like to have your bike step out. That would cost you a lot of time. So you had to like try to keep the bike going straight and try not to like let those roots kind of drag your speed down. And, It just reminded me of a perfect enduro section, like that flat section had his name all over it.
Yeah, that's so funny.
So we all predicted the wrong winner. And like you say, I don't think we were going to predict Martin Mays because none of us knew he was on the start list. But Nico, you did say that Remy Tyrion was going to have a good day out, and he ended up in fourth. What made you think that? Just because he was local, or?
Yeah, I mean, I know that he lives near there, and. And I just thought he'd have some experience on a new track, something that nobody had ever ridden before. He might, I'm not saying he's going out there smashing practice runs, because the track was like the way that they taped it as well. There was a bike park run, and this had like a ton of bus stops off it that were really weird. And there's no way you could go practice it. The first time we rode it in practice was the first time that I think anybody rode the track the way that it was all taped. So I don't think it would be an advantage to really go practice it, but he kind of knew like how long it would be, what to expect. And then, I just figured that maybe a little inspiration from the home crowd would help him out. And it looked like it helped.
Yeah. It was good to see as well, coming back from a pretty horrific injury last season. So it's cool to see him back up there.
Absolutely. He's one of the nicest dudes out there too.
Yeah.
So cool to see him. Cool to see guys that you like. I mean, just in the whole sport, like everybody's pretty tight, like the camaraderie is really good with all the other riders. So everybody's happy for other guys like Remy, who hasn't got a podium in a little while. When you see him up there, they're like, oh, awesome, good for him, like he's back up there.
Yeah, cool. And there was some pretty standout little bits of riding here and there scattered throughout it amongst amazing riding, full stop. But Troy's foot plant into that rock section near the bottom caught my attention. How gnarly was that?
Yeah, it looked like he was going to lose it, and he like managed to not crash. He lost a little time, but he could have lost a lot more time. So that was a big skill for him to be able to save that and then keep on moving forward by doing that foot plant off the drop. It was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, skate park's paying off.
Sometimes you can do stuff in a race run that, like, impromptu that you would never be able to do in practice.
But you're
like, I need to keep moving. I need to get to the finish. You just do stuff. You never think about it or would practice it, but it just happens.
Awesome. And then obviously there was the two guys, Troy and Aaron, both getting pretty creative with the scrubs over that kind of second table. That Aaron's looked pretty close to the limit, to be fair.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, all weekend why people weren't, like, cutting off that jump or whatever, like, going off the side. And at first I thought it was, like, taped where you couldn't do it. And then I, like, saw one picture and I was like, oh, like, you could just go around the whole jump. But I think people were saving it for the final. Like, that happens sometimes where if you do, like, a low line or something. I remember in Wyndham a while ago, like 2011 or something like that, there was a little low line on one of the in jumps, and I, like, started taking it. Not many other people were taking it, and then, like, a couple of us started, and then by the finals it was literally the main line. Like, you, no one took the top of the jump. So sometimes you do want to, like, save those low lines. And it looked like, you know, Aaron just went for it and you know, got a little bit too low.
Yeah, he seemed to win the internet pretty much, though, from a result that I'm sure he wasn't stoked with. He certainly managed to hit the internet pretty hard.
Yeah, I think people would, like, it seemed like some people thought he did it on purpose, like a scrub to, like, nose bunk pump or something like that. But I'm pretty sure that was not on purpose.
Who caught your attention, Nico, through that jump section? It looked pretty hard to kind of to judge and to carry good speed through.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a few different styles. Like, you saw, like, Marcelo would pedal a lot more pedal strokes than a lot of the other guys. He would get, like, on the pedals right away on the landing. And then somebody like Loris would just pump and be, like, tucked and take only the ones that he needed. And in the end, they came out pretty equal. So it's hard sometimes to see, to, like, watch it and be like, well, that dude was a lot faster. He put in a lot more effort rather than somebody who was just more efficient with their style. I think Luca looked really good too there. He looked like he was charging and definitely being aggressive and going for it. It was a bummer that he crashed just shortly after, but I think you can be happy that he just went for it and just took it out aggressively and tried to win it.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, looking at the splits, he was second in G1, the jump section, and Luca was only 0.08 back. But I think it is kind of like Nico was saying, like, I think people have kind of figured out that, you know, the pedaling might not be like the fastest thing to do on a section like that. Like, you take a section like the bottom of Fort William, or you know, like a jump section at
Leo Gang.
Yeah, Leo Gang as well. And if you look at the older result, or like the older videos, like, you see people just sprinting and sprinting there. But now I think people have kind of figured out, like, okay, so, like, where, like, how much speed do I need before it's good for me to tuck? Or, like, is it gonna be better if I just pump this thing instead of pedal here or whatever? And, like, oh, maybe I should, like, save a little bit of energy here and just, like, do a, like, 100% sprint, like, on this little bit after this jump or whatever. And, like, you could kind of see that, like, Marcelo looked like he was just so fast, and he was 17th on that one. And so it's kind of like, okay, so, like, maybe it's more about, like, getting some backsides and, like, pumping this and pumping that or whatever.
And do you think the aerodynamic side of it comes in at all in a section like that? Like, obviously the kit's getting tighter these days, and, you know, people kind of practicing their tuck position, people looking at the best way to get tucked in.
I think maybe not that race in La Bresse. It seemed like it was a little bit slower. It felt like it on the bike than, like, say, Leo Gang or Fort William. I think those tracks, the aerodynamic is a little bit more important, but it's hard to quantify. You could do practice runs with different like I used to cut my helmet, like, the top of the peak, so you, the air would go through it, and it looked really bad. Like, like, a few times, Danny Hart, like, told me that it looks terrible. And I'm like, yeah, but it's free, like, time. Like, I can't see it. It doesn't just bother me at all. And if the air goes through it faster than me, of course I'm going to do it. And he's just like, oh, it looks like shit. So, like, and I also raced with last year at Fort William Leo Gang with like, rubber shoe covers over my shoes. I felt like that was going to help, but it's, like, it's really hard to, like, unless you can go in a wind tunnel, which is expensive and hard to get access to. Loic and those guys went in. They might be able to, well, I'm sure they wouldn't tell anyone what they found out, but they went in there and found some, like, I'm sure, advantages to doing it. But I think that, like, it's kind of a black art for most of the riders, where you want to try to be aerodynamic, but it's still something that you can't exactly quantify. Like, if you do this, you will gain this amount of time.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, let's look forwards then. So our predictions so far have been pretty abysmal. Nico, you got women's right, but otherwise we've got everything wrong so far this season. World champs, Lenzerheide. Let's start with the women. Elliot, what are your thoughts?
I wonder if I should change it up or just like gambling here. I might as well just stick with who I don't. I yeah, it'd be good for Tani to win world champs. Although, like, I would like G's riding well now too. I would like to see like the Atherton 1-2 or like Atherton 1-1. That would be really sweet.
G's not selected.
Oh right, G's not in the British. I forgot about that. Oh yeah,
yeah. Which now feels absolutely criminal, really, with ninth overall in the season and the second place.
yeah, right. Okay. Well, I'll stick with Tani. Sure.
Okay, Nico, what about you?
I'm going to pick Tani this weekend as well. I think you'd be hard pressed to pick anybody other than Rachel and Tani right now. And I think after the result this weekend, she's going to be pretty motivated and fired up, where Rachel might be feeling pretty content with her win. Not content, but like she felt like she accomplished her goal for the year, and Worlds would just be a bonus, whereas Tani's kind of got a little bit of fire in her belly to try and go win that one.
Yeah, I agree. It's a clean streak. I think Tani's angry, fired up, wants it. She was looking like she could have taken it last year as well, but got unlucky. So yeah, I think that's probably fair. And then what about the men's? I mean, it's way more than a two-horse race, isn't it? There's a huge amount of guys in there that could win this one. And Martin Mays is racing.
Oh yeah. He's just wins worlds.
Go on, Elliot, you first. What do you think?
Okay, so I've been working on like predicting the results and predicting the times. So I'm going to just, maybe I'll post something on Instagram or something, because I think my little computer thing can do a lot better job than I can.
Interesting. So you've been doing it based on past data, right?
Yeah. The times are a lot easier than the results, but yeah.
Okay. So we need to look at your Instagram over the next few weeks then.
Yeah, maybe I can only do it after qualifying, which is kind of cheating, but I guess I'll throw out a prediction now. I think maybe I'll just say Greg.
Interesting. Yeah. Go on, what are your thoughts on that one?
I think he's riding well, and I think he like is pretty hungry for it, and he's done well in the past at Lenzerheide, so it should be interesting. Kind of like, for me, it's kind of in between him and Aaron, because you know, they both ride really well there, but then at the same time, like, I don't, are they both like all the way back on form? So it's kind of hard, but it would be between those two for me, and I think I'd go with Greg.
Yeah. Interesting. What about you, Nico?
Oh man, this has got to be one of the hardest ones to choose, because there's so many fast guys right now, and there's really nothing to hold back for. It's world champs. It's the last race of the year. So you don't have any kind of points chase or any reason to just do a safe run, or you only need to do this much to win it. Everybody has nothing to lose. They don't want, there's 10 guys that could win it and don't want to get second place. So man, when everybody's a different style too. When you're on the side of the track at these races watching, like, nobody is riding with more confidence and commitment than Amari right now. Like, it's incredible the stuff that he does.
Yeah,
he's like,
that is so true.
He's riding like he can't crash. Like,
like, yeah, that is so true.
That he's going to hurt himself. Like, if you're playing a video game, you just throw it as hard as, throw everything you have at it. And that's what he looks like when he's riding, and it works. If he has a good run, it's going to be, I don't think there's anybody that can ride his pace right now, but he still has been somewhat inconsistent. I mean, he won the series by a lot, but like the past couple of weeks, he's not made it to the bottom and won the race. So, and then you've got somebody like Loic, who is so good at world champs. He won it as a junior. He won it twice as an elite. He's won more world championships than he's won world cups. But he also has crashed a lot in final runs. So that's another one that you don't know. And then somebody like Aaron right now, I think he's riding a lot better than his results showed this weekend. He's pretty fired up. He's really hungry for the win. And Lenzerheide has been good for him in the past. Last year he would have won it. He flatted within 30 seconds of the finish and was up by a lot. So I think that's going to be good for him. He's riding the new 29er, which he's going to spend a lot more time. He's going to ride it all week in Morzine and get it tuned in on a more similar terrain than what he's going to race. So there's just so many fast guys. But I'm gonna have to say that Amari's going to win it. And if he has his best run, I don't think anybody can touch his pace.
Okay, cool. That'd be interesting to see how it goes. And I've struggled over this one. Like you said, there's so many people out there, and there's a couple of guys in my head that seem to be able to really let it hang out, which is, I guess, the time to do it is Worlds, end of the season, last race, nothing to lose. So it's kind of between Laurie Greenland and Danny Hart in my head. And I think I'm going to go with Danny just because he's got that bit more experience. I think he's been kind of getting quicker all season and seems to be in a pretty good place and pretty confident on the bike. So yeah, I'm gonna put my money on Danny. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think at World Champs too, you see somebody like him that's able to really raise the bar. Like his run from Val d'Isole Worlds, like you don't see people like ride like that. It's just insane. you don't watch him in a World Cup. Like it's,
yeah,
he's going for it. He's leaving nothing on the track. He wants to win or go down trying with green lights the whole way. He doesn't want to get second. So he's somebody who can rise for Worlds and a track like that. I could see any of 10 guys winning this thing, which is going to be so exciting to watch the race.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Man, like,
yeah, it's great.
That is so true about Amari as well. Like, I am kind of interested to see like how he handles World Champs now that he's just, yeah, playing like a video game. Just like going so fast. I wonder if he'll get like just a crazy run, just win by, you know, 3-4 seconds or something.
Yeah, it'd be good. I'm excited and not long to wait. So yeah, it's gonna be cool. We'll wrap it up there. Thanks again for your time. Really enjoyed chatting and catching up. And Nico, all the best for recovery on your hand. And yeah, looking forward to Lenzerheide, and then we'll try and catch up after that.
Sweet. Thanks a lot, guys. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice one. Cheers, guys. See ya. All right, that's it for this episode. I hope you're enjoying this new format for us. And I'm having a lot of fun chatting to Elliot and Nico and finding out more about the World Cups. If you're enjoying it, head over to iTunes, leave us a review. Don't forget you can grab a t-shirt and support the podcast from our web store, downtimepodcast.com/shop. We'll have another awesome episode for you on the 11th of September. But until then, get out and ride.